Let's get back to the Cyber Advisor on TalkZone.com. Once again, here is David Revelle.
Welcome back. I'm Dave Revelle, and this is the Cyber Advisor. You can join us 463-6748. This is the show that takes careful look at you, your money, and our future. No trite slogans here. We try to call them as we see them. Now, in our last segment, we took a look at how the financial community, how Wall Street looks at the economy. Now we're going to turn our sights on Washington, where our politicians have a very different view of the financial picture. We know they want to reduce pollution, but the question is, do they want to reduce our jobs? If you look at the plate of what Washington has, it is truly and absolutely astounding. It's as if they want to change everything they possibly can think about the economy over the next very short period of time. Almost all of these reforms come up as quickly as they possibly can. Let's just take a brief look at all of the reforms that we have ahead of us. First is healthcare. Healthcare is one-fifth of the U.S. economy. And what is proposed by this administration is a radical, dramatic change in the way that healthcare is offered and administered in the United States. We're going into a single-payer system. We're going to change the lives of most of the insurance companies, certainly most of the medical providers, the doctors, and so on and so forth. It is as dramatic as we could possibly think of. It seems to be a redux of the Hillary Clinton healthcare provisions of the early 1990s. The second major set of reforms that everyone's looking at are the TARP and TALF reforms. These were major reforms that were begun under George W. Bush. And I think it's very important that everyone understand precisely what TARP and TALF, and I know these names are just horrible. I hate them as much as you do. But I think it's important that everyone understand what TARP and TALF were designed to do and what the problem that they were designed to attack. You have to understand that 6 months ago, last fall, we had a complete global financial meltdown. The financial system in this country and frankly all around the world was had a significant problem. We had a dramatic, steep, precipitous rise in the price of gasoline. That's an automatic tax on the consumer. That automatically means that you're going to see the consumers spend less and less on other goods as they are forced to spend more and more on gasoline. It is exactly like the gas crisis that we had in the 1970s. It was nearly as dramatic, and it had a profound effect. It was the precipitous effect that sent us into negative GDP growth and therefore into a recession. But there was another hidden under the surface attack that also, or a problem that also occurred, and that was we had a dramatic run on the financial institutions, specifically the New York financial institutions. We had a call on about $500 billion in money market funds that transpired all at about the same time. And the problem was, without making a long story too long, money market funds had been allowed to become less liquid than they needed to become. The average maturity on a money market funds runs to about currently 40 to 45 days maturity. That is to say that every security they buy today matures in about 45 days. If I have to sell that that security early, I may have to do it for a lower price. And that was, by the size of the redemption, by the run on the money market funds, by the size of the redemptions that were coming in, they were going to be forced to go into the marketplace, accept a lower price, and essentially break the bank, or in the money market terms, break a buck, redeemed for less than a dollar. That was an event that potentially could have shattered the whole situation. What happened there was generally the Federal Reserve, and then backed up by TARP and TALF, which were two pieces of legislation that came out of Congress. Federal Reserve said, we will stand behind you. We will be the liquidity for all of these this run that we're having on the bank. It was absolutely essential. It needed to happen. It was a little bit about what Lyle Gramley was speaking about early. Very important that this take place. If it had not, we were going to see a cratering of the financial system in the country. So there's a piece of reform. There's something that stands on its own. It was something that we needed to do. But here are some other types of reform that really do come into question. Another thing that is on our desk at the moment is that we want to replace the Obama administration wants to replace much of the enforcement policy of the Securities and Exchange Commission with the Federal Reserve Bank. Now, clearly the Federal Reserve has an important role to play in all of this, and we just described one of their most important plays, and that is to keep the financial markets open, running, and working. That is a credit-creating process. It is making credit available to institutions that may be in trouble. It is not an enforcement process, which is what the Securities and Exchange Commission historically does and was set up to do, and that is to make sure those institutions are playing by the rule and doing everything validly. If you put both of those functions under one roof, you have a problem. The other thing that we did was the stimulus bill. The purpose of the stimulus bill, as described by the president, was to keep unemployment down. We were told when the stimulus bill was passed that had we not passed the stimulus bill, unemployment would have gone to 8%. At the time it was passed, it was, I believe, 6.5 or 6.7%. If you don't pass this and pass it urgently and quickly, it'll go to 8%. As everyone knows, we're well in excess of 9%. We've lost 2.2 million jobs since stimulus was passed. And one wonders, you know, how that works. At what point do we say stimulus does not appear to be working? Let's review stimulus. That doesn't appear to be the way Washington works. And that's the way every single company in the world works, but it's not the way Washington works. If a Ford Motor Company comes out with an Edsel and it doesn't sell, people don't like it, they're not making any money on it, you can bet within they're going to turn that thing around very, very quickly. Unfortunately, Washington doesn't do that. And here we have a gigantic stimulus bill, $1.75 to $2 trillion when fully rolled out, that we don't seem to be able to get into. Well, anyway, there's the first four major reforms that I see that are on our plate. Healthcare, TARP, which has already been done, the SEC replacing the Fed as the financial market's chief cop, and the stimulus bill. But today, life marches on. We have another major Obama administration reform bill, which is being voted on actually as we speak. And this is the Waxman-Markey bill, sponsored by Congressman Henry Waxman of California and Ed Markey of Massachusetts. It's also called cap and trade. Now, the basic purpose of cap and trade is to put a cap, if you will, to put a top on the amount of carbon emissions that are allowed into the atmosphere. The trade part of it comes in that some companies, under certain circumstances, will be allowed to trade with companies that are producing less. They'll get some credit for that, and there will be some sort of a marketplace back and forth trading these cap credits. But at its fundamental roots, at its basis, you have to understand that this is fundamentally a tax for people who are using carbon, the biggest or producing carbon dioxide emissions. Basically, the biggest carbon dioxide emissions people are the ones who use fossil fuels, such as utilities, automobile companies, and so on and so forth. Now, somehow we've been led to believe that this is a tax that will create jobs. Recently, President Obama was in the Rose Garden when he introduced the bill, and clearly in his mind, the purpose of this bill is to create jobs. Mr. Producer,
Make no mistake, this is a jobs bill. We're already seeing why this is true in the clean energy investments we're making through the Recovery Act. In California, 3,000 people will be employed to build a new solar plant that will create 1,000 jobs. In Michigan, investments in wind turbines and wind technology is expected to create over 2,600 jobs. In Florida, three new solar projects are expected to employ 1,400 people. The list goes on and on, but the point is this. This legislation will finally make clean energy the profitable kind of energy. That will lead to the creation of new businesses and entire new industries. And that will lead to American jobs that pay well and can't be outsourced.
Now, for a moment, let's give him the benefit of the doubt and assume that he's using a micro example to make a macro point. That is to say that he's using the 3,000 jobs, the 2,600 jobs in Michigan, and the 1,400 jobs being created in Florida. And let's say in some sense that that's an analogy for the whole economy, and that becomes the argument. Here's what you have to understand. This is a tax. It will lower economic activity throughout the country. The EPA, and recently, incidentally, the Waxman-Markey bill was changed from a sponsorship of the EPA to a sponsorship of the USDA for a reason that absolutely escapes me. But anyway, the EPA estimates in their most optimistic, most positive estimate is that this tax will cost the average household throughout America $98 to $140 per year annually. It is a tax. It is money that is coming out of the system and going into a government system, but it's going to government. It is coming out of the economic system. If you take $98 or $140 a month, depending upon what the range is, and you multiply that by the 150 million households that we currently have in the country, it is a very, very, very large number. And that is the most optimistic projection that you could see. Heritage has a projection of a loss of $1.7 to $2 trillion over the first 10 years that cap and trade is in effect. Let's go back and talk now and think about Wall Street. What's Wall Street telling us? Wall Street is telling us that this is a fragile, sensitive economic recovery, that unless we continue to give incentive and unless we continue to provide stimulus to the economy, and taxes are not stimulus, unless we continue to provide stimulus to the economy, then we could be in real trouble. On the other hand, here we have now essentially a $2 trillion tax over the next 10 years on what the economy is going to do. That it just does not make sense. It does not work. It is one of the reasons why Wall Street says, and what's our exit strategy and how do we get out of this? If you have a situation where you have a tremendous increase in the cost of doing business, it does not help us as we try and regrow this economy. One of the most interesting things to me is this should not be news to Washington. If Washington can read the tea leaves of the American public, they can see that in general, the American public feels the same way. A majority of, or certainly a plurality of Americans feel that cap and trade will not be a positive on the economy. An interesting majority to me, 74% of all Americans believe that they could do a better job, in running the economy of the country right now than the politicians are. We're unfortunately getting ourselves into a difficult situation with cap and trade. Now going back for just a minute, and let's take a look at the stimulus bill. The stimulus bill, we're about $44 billion in providing help through the stimulus bill. The problem with the stimulus bill is when it's fully rolled out at a 1.75 trillion or whatever the number ends up being, then we're going to have to start paying on the bonds that are going to be used to pay for that. Currently, as you probably know, last week was the largest Treasury bond auction in history. And it seems that it's bound to pale in comparison to some of the auctions that we're going to see ahead of us. This is why the economy continues to look more and more fragile as we see the government and the stimulus package, quote unquote, taking more of the funds out of the economy instead of actually contributing more of the funds into the economy. The concept which seems to be central to this, that the cap on carbon emissions will be a foundation for economic growth, appears to be just exactly the opposite of what could possibly happen here. In 1930, the Congress, which was just after the great break of the stock market, but kind of before the beginning of the Depression itself, in 1930, Congress last passed a major tax increase. That tax increase was called Smoot-Hawley and is considered by most historians one of the greatest reasons for the longevity of that particular recession. Well, let's take a break at the moment. We'll be right back in just a minute, where we'll talk about one of the world's best investors. I'm Dave Revell, and we'll be right back.